back and bigger than ever. It's the unofficial 40 from Soonerscoop.com. Now, here's the entire Sooner Scoop crew. Carrie, Josh, Eddie, and Bob.
All right, welcome back. It is the unofficial 40 podcast from Soonerscoop.com podcast. We welcome in the entire gang as I guess I should be somber and just not be too excited as the Oklahoma's coming off a loss to Kansas State. It has been awful. But, you know, we talked to Lincoln Riley yesterday. We'll talk to Alex Grinch today. We're doing this here podcast on a Wednesday morning to kind of look back at what we saw on Saturday. And really, nobody has looked back on it more than Josh McQuish, who joins us, along with Eddie Radosovich and Bob Prisbillo. Eddie and Bob were at the game. Josh did the Monday Morning Idiot on Monday and was not on the postgame. Bob wasn't either. So we actually have a couple of guys that get to weigh in here with their first thoughts since the game ended. And Josh, let's go ahead and start with you, as is customary.
You know, and I want to hear, you know, from Bob as well, because I listened to the postgame. But guys, this is one of those games that I don't know how to feel about it, because in so many ways Oklahoma played well. I mean, the defense, you talk about
first
2
half
for 11
was a great
on,
performance by
two
the defense.
For 11 on third down. Nobody wins with that number. Nobody ever. 10 first downs total. Like, those are things that a dominant defense does. That's what you're looking for, and somehow they gave up 38 points. And I mean, we understand it. It was turnovers, it was big plays.
Block
like
punt.
You understand that there were negatives, but like I said it in the idiot, I'm more concerned about the offense right now, because I don't know if there are the playmakers they need at the skill positions, and the offensive line, which is the thing we thought we could count on, is problematic. So I don't know what that offense does. I thought the defense had great stretches of the game. I thought the offense kind of sputtered all day.
Yeah, and I will say this too. It was a little bit of a just kind of a lot of things came together. I mean, Kansas State losing a bunch of their secondary members and then playing two safeties over the top all day took away anything that Spencer Rattler had on the outside and basically made it Austin Stogner game over the middle. And I'll say this. OU and Lincoln Riley, they can do this. It's not hard. They have to figure out their best weapons, their best playmakers to catch short passes and to make yards after the catch. Because right now, they're relying way too much on Charleston Rambo to play that role, and he doesn't fill it well. There are definitely other players on the offense that can do better than him at that.
Yeah, I kept tweeting all fourth quarter, this is the biggest drive of Spencer Rattler's career. And there's like 3 drives in a row. I kept saying that. And then I realized he doesn't have CeeDee Lamb. He doesn't have that guy he knows he can go to. So as much as we've talked about the collective group has been nice, not having a number one, not having someone that you could just, you know, turn, throw a two-yard pass to Lamb like Iowa State and Kansas State last year and just turn up field and go, you really saw what Josh was saying, that lack of an elite playmaker at this point of the season when it comes to the offense. Because there was no one those last 2 drives where you thought, that's where Rattler should go, that's how this offense is going to get moving again.
And they don't have a number one because they determined that Charleston Rambo is their number one, and Yikes. He's not a number one.
At least we haven't seen that through 2 games, right? I mean, he drops a pass in the end zone the first game. Those screen balls that they threw out to him, you're used to having somebody like a Marquise Brown, somebody like a Dede Westbrook, whoever that can get upfield. And I don't know if he was just waiting for blocks or if he just didn't have the confidence in being able to turn upfield. But, I mean, that did not look good. And it's kind of interesting. It's like, now that we're a few days removed from it and, you know, hearing Bob and Josh talk about it, it's weird to talk about Oklahoma losing that game and remembering that, like, the way that people have talked about that game in the days after, you would think that it's a situation that Oklahoma got beat by 3 touchdowns. But that's not the case. They were up by 3 touchdowns with 2:50 left.
I'm sorry for the submarine sounds. I don't know what's going on.
I have no idea. It was really bugging me, though. It's
Bob's connection is
strange.
Weird. Anyway, Josh, you mentioned the offensive line. You went back and did Monday Morning Idiot. How bad is it from your perspective?
You know, everybody wants to pin it on one guy or another guy, and I thought collectively it just wasn't good. I don't think Creed Humphrey had a good day. I don't think really anyone had a day they were that proud of. Now, having said that, if you want me to point out a guy that really needs to step it up and stop messing around, it's Tyrese Robinson. His fourth quarter was bad. I mean, bad, bad. You've got a freshman out there in Anton Harrison that I thought had a decent game, really. I mean, it really, I thought made Spencer Rattler a little more comfortable in the pocket, but Tyrese Robinson had the penalties. You just run down the list of problems there for him in the fourth quarter, and it was bad. And I don't know if it's a conditioning thing. I don't know if it's the offensive line hasn't spent a lot of time working together, because, you know, we're all used to, oh, but Bill Beatenbow always is going to tinker and mess with that lineup, and
sure,
he really
yeah.
is a guy that focuses on, I want my best five, not necessarily my best left tackle, my best center. I want my best unit. And so he's working on that, and I understand that, and he didn't have the non-conference that we're all accustomed to for that to kind of get worked out. But, I mean, you guys talk about it. This is the game I thought was the danger game coming up in Iowa State the week before Texas. There's all the reason in the world you could think they could look ahead, all those things. But now you've got to go to Iowa State, your first road game, coming off a just a pitifully bad loss. And then Texas? Guys, 1-3 is not entirely impossible. Like, I don't think that's what's going to happen, but this, especially that offensive line, needs to wake up and needs to do it fast.
Is it fixable, Josh? I mean, and I think that there has been a growing sentiment out there that are Tyrese Robinson and Marquise Hayes too heavy? You look at the last four possessions of the game. Marquise Hayes, hold, puts OU in first and 20 at their own 37. The next series, third and 10. You have another holding call that was offset by a Kansas State holding call. That's followed up by the third and 10 sack on Spencer Rattler. Oklahoma has to punt. You look at the next possession. You have the third and 7. You have a holding call on Tyrese Robinson. I mean, it seemed like they almost got tired. They got their ass worn out, didn't they?
Oh, I think they absolutely did. And I do. I want to be clear. I think it's fixable. I think this is one of those things, and I talk about it every year. There is a cohesion that an offensive line needs time to develop, and I think they are just having to do it literally on Saturdays. Like, here we go, game speed, let's do this. Like, there's just not been that normal time. And I think Oklahoma has got to find a way to, okay, we can't do this the way we've always done it. We're going to have to figure out something new. They're going to have to find out how they make that gel happen a little faster, because you can't just keep learning on the fly, especially, like I said, with, you know, two of your tougher games on the season coming up in the next few weeks. So I think it can be fixed. I'm very interested to see if we, you know, we saw Andrew Rame a lot at left guard. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see if maybe he gets some snap at the right side. I know in the preseason, Bill Beatenbow talked about him, but basically playing everywhere but left tackle. So you've got to think he can make it work at right guard. That's a side of the line he spent a lot of time on at Broken Arrow. So there are a lot of things that make that make sense for me, and I wonder if he gets some snaps in Oklahoma, just if nothing else, to put a little pressure on Robinson. Like, you know, I know you've been a 15, 16-game starter, but now it's time, you know, for you to either do something or we're going to have to find another option.
Which is a little surprising, too. I think just for the matter of the fact that, I mean, I know you're working some new guys in there, and their best drive on the ground might have been the drive that you had Andrew Rame at left guard, Anton Harrison at left tackle, which is kind of a coincidence that they're both freshmen. But for the most part, it's not like these guys haven't worked together ever. I mean, when you talk about Creed Humphrey, Tyrese Robinson, Marquise Hayes, and Adrian Ealy, all those guys have played together.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like they just are getting out there for the first time.
Oh, sure. And that's fair. But, like, I mean, you talk about it, guys. I was looking at that offense, that group that started the game. There were four guys that were playing at a position they had started at before, or at least had any real starting experience four guys on that entire offense, and Braden Willis is one of them who has been an off-again, on-again starter, and then you've got the three interior offensive linemen. You had Swenson and Ely flipped for, did anybody ask about that? That was a weird, it lasted for a series, and they were like, oh, that never mind, that didn't work. That whole thing was just very strange. It almost felt like they ran to the wrong side of the line. They were like, oh, screw it, let's just go with it. because there was no commitment.
I almost would rather let that be the excuse than the opposite of they were trying something new.
Especially when you hear Ely talk yesterday that he loves right tackle.
Right?
Usually those guys don't care. Whatever does the team best. But he was pretty adamant. Right tackle's the spot that he wants to be at.
Oh, I think that, Bob, it's there's no doubt, and I think I've even put it in the presser notes yesterday, just as far as he is more comfortable at right tackle. And I think, playing offensive line, I would have to think that being comfortable and confident in what you're doing is, almost half the battle before the ball snapped.
I don't give a shit if you're comfortable or not. You want to play left tackle. Trent Williams didn't want to play left tackle. He was a right tackle.
Sure.
He didn't want to move. He moved. It was the best thing that ever happened. Now he's one of the best.
Oh, no doubt.
He's been one of the best offensive linemen.
I would imagine every morning when he looks at his bank account, he probably doesn't even have to. When you're that rich, you don't even look at your bank account. He's like, yeah, I made the right decision.
I mean, Orlando Brown, left tackle. He's right tackle now for the Ravens. They've got the Stanley guy at left tackle. But your value is greater if you can play left tackle. Now, sure. Just like Lane Johnson. I mean, he's moved to right tackle for the Eagles. But you want to be the left tackle. Like, that you should never say, I'm fine being right tackle. That's where I'm comfortable. Like, nobody that's moved over to left tackle that played right is comfortable. You don't move over there to be comfortable. You move over there to make yourself more money, to be more valuable. See, I wish he wouldn't say that.
And it's kind of funny that, it just depends on which way you want to look at it. Do you want to blame the offense? Do you want to blame the defense? When in reality, both sides played terribly in the fourth quarter. The special teams, you get your first punt blocked in 7 years, and all of a sudden, when you turn the ball over four times, or six, if you want to go the Lincoln Riley route of the failed fourth and one conversion and the block punt, all of a sudden, you're really in a shithole.
Here's what and Josh kind of pointed this out. I don't think the defense was as bad as it felt after the game. Like, yes, there were some monumental fuck-ups by that defense.
No doubt.
But overall, it's still a defense that you don't want it to lose its confidence, because it can't be. I mean, it can play well, and it played well in the first half. It just had some terrible, terrible mental busts. And by the way, Teddy Lehman came out and said this. Brian Meade was not responsible for that. I mean, and that makes total sense. Like, what defensive coach in their right mind is going to have their middle linebacker or weak side linebacker running stride for stride with an empty set running back down the field 60 yards? No one. And if you do, you're a fucking moron. I mean, he was supposed to have, and it was obvious when you watch the playback, Josh. Like,
why are you pointing out a picture of Mike Stoops? Why'd you pick out a program?
Shut up, Josh. When you rewatch the Monday Morning Idiot, I mean, you saw he was playing an area when he let him run by. So that kind of told you, he's not supposed to cover that guy.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, now, my only problem with that reasoning is everybody else looks like they're playing man. Like, there's not a lot. Like, I maybe he got the call and everybody else didn't. Or, you could absolutely see that, because on the play, you see Meade look over like he's looking at Woody Washington or looking at somebody, and he's trying to say something.
Yeah.
And so, I could absolutely get it if they saw what happened. And, okay, Meade's been motioned out. Obviously, that's a matchup problem for us. Okay, let's change up the call.
They should have called timeout there. I mean, that's,
yes,
they should have
called. You've got to call timeout. To me, that's the bigger problem. Now, at the same time, and I said it in the Idiot, Meade's got to make that play when it happens downfield. Like, that's where it goes really wrong. Like, it went from, oh, shit, to, oh, this is a huge, effing problem. Like, this is a real issue here.
Did he think the guy was running towards the south end zone? It was the strangest thing. Like, he waited on him to, come to him when he finally chased him down at that little moment at, the 30-yard line. I don't know. That was just weird.
But the whole thing about, you know, get Brian Meade off the field. He should never play again. He's nothing but Brandon Crow. Just cut that shit out. I don't want to hear that shit. Like, Brian Meade, he had a sack last game. I mean, he's a walk-on, and he's not the elite athlete, but he's done some good things as a linebacker at Oklahoma. He's not just total trash. So get the fuck out of here with the he should never play. I don't want to hear that shit anymore.
Oh, my ears are
kind of talking so much. I'm not real far off that take. I just see, like, and that play, I mean, okay, like, that's fine. I like, you know, Teddy's explanation, like, that makes sense. There's another, and I can't remember if it was a 3rd-and-1 or a 4th-and-1, and it was in the third quarter, and he's scraping down, and if you put, and I bet money, if you put Agwebu or White or Asamoah where he was, they meet him in the hole and they make the play. Meade's slow to get there, and Kansas State converts. And, I mean, it's not like, I'm not, like, the guy is what he is. I'm just saying, as minimal reps as you can give him, the better. Like, he's just not on the level of your other linebackers.
No, he's not. Nobody's saying that he is. I mean, nobody's saying he should be a starter.
My issue also is, and I think part of it is just, I'll own it. I love Witter. Like, I would like to see Witter get those snaps. But,
I
will totally own that about myself. But yeah, guys, I'm sitting here watching the replay right now. Almost everybody else on that field's playing man. Like, and I don't know what happened there. I can't explain it. The thing, Kerry, the guy, you know, you're talking about Meade and that's bullshit. The guy that I don't really get the hate for right now is Pat Fields.
Yeah.
Every time that defense doesn't play well, it's Pat Fields' fault. And I don't understand it. Like, I'm not saying he is Roy Williams or Brandon Everidge or any of the great safeties we've seen at Oklahoma, but this is not a bad player. He had one bad moment, and everybody will point to it. He got shaken in the open field by friggin' Deuce Vaughn, who's going to shake a lot of people before his career is over. Like, that's not the egregious thing that people are trying to turn it into. And if any play happens, like, it could be a bad punt return. They're like, oh, Pat Fields had to have been in on that play. Like, it's always Pat Fields. And I'm like, it's just crazy. That's not the reality.
To me, the one guy on defense that you can point to that says you're better than that, you're not playing up to your standards, Trey Brown so far.
Sure.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He hasn't been good. I think guys that you kind of thought going into the season that this defense was going to rely on as far as, you know, Trey Brown. Did anybody have a good day on the defensive line? I mean, to not be able to generate any type of pass rush, and that was part of the problem, you know, even on the Meade play. Skylar Thompson sat back there for 6 seconds.
He did. I'm torn about this because, guys, before that Deuce Vaughn run that tied the game, Kansas State was averaging 1.3 yards per carry.
I know.
That's domination up front. Sure. That's ideal. But you're absolutely right. They weren't creating a lot of pressure. But part of me feels like, and you saw it on that last series when Justin Broyles makes the tackle on third down, OU gets the ball back to have that last chance. On that last defensive series, OU starts dialing up the pressure again. Deshaun White's coming up the middle on blitzes. All of a sudden, Skylar Thompson's seeing some heat in his face, and he's having to get rid of the ball quicker, and Oklahoma's, you know, his throws aren't as good. He's having to kind of dump it down so the plays aren't as big. All of a sudden, plays start going in Oklahoma's direction defensively. I thought Oklahoma, for one of the few times I can say this about us, Grinch, I thought they got pretty comfortable in the second half and just kind of said, we're going to keep everything in front of us. Like, it just didn't look as aggressive. And I thought the defense tired out partially because the offense kept giving Kansas State the ball.
Interesting stat from Kaden McFarland. I know that you saw this, Josh, because you retweeted it as well. Plays of 35-plus yards allowed by OU's defense. First 11 games of the Grinch era, 10. Last three games, 35 yards or more. They've allowed 10 plays in the last three games. That's an insane number. And that goes all the way back to the Baylor game, in which you have a third-string quarterback throwing for those yards. So they have given up the big play.
They were dominating Baylor until that quarterback came in.
Then all of a sudden, the avalanche starts, and it has to be some type of mental thing as far as some of the guys that are on this team that have a little bit of PTSD from the 17-18 years as far as, oh, shit, here we go again. And then all of a sudden the ball starts rolling down the hill.
I agree completely, Eddie. I think that's a huge part of it is just, I mean, you can see it. Like, because, and I think there are guys that don't buy into it. Like, Asamoah, I love some of the stuff you could see, like, when they would go down to close shots with him, you know, third down, stuff like that. He's talking to people. He's clapping. He's, like, his body language is what you want it to be. But you look around at some of those older guys, and you're like, you can see it. Like, it's just, it's, you know, PTSD. They've been through it so many times that as soon as something goes bad, there's just this inevitable feeling. And, you know, you pick it up just watching them.
Here's one thing that Lincoln Riley said yesterday, which really struck me. You know, he's asked about leaders. He's asked about, you know, guys that are vocal in team meetings. I mean, we all know they had guys like that. And all these guys, you know, Kenneth Murray's gone. He's first-round draft pick. Neville Gallimore's gone. You had Q Overton that was a, you know, experienced guy. Who else did they really lose? I'm trying to think.
Last year's team?
Yeah, Motley was very vocal. I mean, they just don't have... The fact that Lincoln Riley had to put Ronnie Perkins in the leader category, a guy that's not even playing...
Interesting.
...was like, wow, they really don't have anybody on the field other than Pat Fields. And that's the thing. It's like, yeah, Creed Humphrey is a leader, but it's really hard for an offensive center to lead a team. Like, Baker was so different at quarterback. Kyler did it in his own way. I mean, guys, that's really kind of one of the big stories. I know we've kind of shied away from it because, you know, the defense didn't play well, but I just look at this and everyone assumed that Lincoln Riley was just going to wave a magic wand. You know, Spencer Rattler was third in the odds to win the Heisman going into the season. And, like, it was just going to be another Heisman winner. And no one stopped to think about, well, you know, he's a freshman that's never started at this level. Maybe there's going to be, and from Arizona, by the way, not like from Texas or Florida that's played against really top competition. Like, he's a freshman that's going to have some growing pains. And no one wanted to say that because they're like, oh, Lincoln Riley will prevent that. You can't prevent, there's nothing you can do to prevent that.
I don't think it's a hot take either to still say that he's going to probably still, by the end of the year, he will be one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I mean, I think that's fair to say. There's nothing, I mean, cut down the turnovers, he's still 30 with 41 and almost threw for 400 yards and four touchdowns on Saturday against Kansas State. It was just when the lights were on and you needed that drive that, and, you know, I think I said it on the, we said it on the postgame podcast, but, I mean, as much as it hurts me to say it, if Jalen Hurts is the quarterback for Oklahoma last Saturday, I think they might win the game. I think they might win the game. And I hate saying that, believe me. But at the same time, like, he had that, almost that.
Tony on line two. She liked to make a call into the program.
Oh.
If you could put a little.
Hello, hey, Tony, how are you?
Fuck
you. So I just, like, I don't think anybody, and maybe even, I don't know if you could see it on TV, Josh, but it just felt like this is asking a lot from this kid right now to lead this team down the field. With that said, though, he breaks off the 15-yard run that ends up getting called back. Who knows what happens if it's first and 10 at the 50 with 3.5 minutes left.
That's the first time he's ever been in that position. I mean, sure. It really is the first time at this level, first time he's ever been in that position. Like, if he would have just flown through that with flying colors, we would have questioned whether he was even human or not.
Sure.
Judging by his new haircut, I don't know if he is.
Sources have said that the haircut has been...
They're gone.
...has been remedied.
Yeah. I have heard
that's
that
a smart
nuked.
Decision. I actually...
What do you bet they never return?
I think they should have done it at halftime.
I actually... You know what? The kid's got a chance. That's how I feel.
He gets it. This kid just gets
he
it.
He gets it.
He gets it.
He does. He has it.
You don't mess with Juju, man. You can't just leave that stuff alone, man. Don't go messing with your hair when you're playing well. That's crazy.
And not to mention that a lot of what Oklahoma did offensively on Saturday was basically overshadowed with the inability to run the ball in the fourth quarter because Drake Stoops had a nice game. I thought what they did with the H-backs and Austin Stogner specifically, like he is going to be – is he the number one outlet for Spencer Rattler right now? I'd have to say yes.
And I think – Theo Weiss can get more and more involved. I think he's a guy that Rattler can trust, that can make plays, that can, most importantly, get open on a regular basis. more so than Rambo's shown to do.
I liked what they were doing with rolling him out. And I mean, Weiss was finding the yardage stick and standing right there. It was, I thought that they converted a couple plays in between the first and third quarters. Like, if you can take the first through three quarters and two-ish minutes, there's a lot to like there. There's a lot of reason to think that if you can replicate that in Ames this weekend, OU's going to probably win the game. But it was the bad that just overshadowed everything. And, you know, it was a meltdown. I don't think there was, I'm more worried about how they responded to the comeback from Kansas State than I am anything that else that happened in the game. I thought they kind of rolled over and, you know, for a lack of better terms, took it like a bunch of bunk bitches.
Okay. All right. By the way, we want to mention you guys, our great sponsor to the podcast, brand new to the podcast, deadsoxy.com. They've got great socks all for men, women. A lot of people on the site have been going and ordering them. They've got the patented no-slip silicone beads and the welt to prevent the dreaded slippage. They've got the crimson and cream color waves to support your favorite college program. And also high-quality source fabrics that up your sock game to the next level. Eddie and I have both received care packages from Dead Soxy. We both worn the socks. And Eddie, I know you wore yours on game day, right?
Absolutely. And I was walking around all over Norman, and it was awesome because they're comfortable AF. I don't buy socks from Walmart anymore. I only wear Dead Soxy.
Well,
you can do the same. 30% off promo code exclusively for Sooner Scoop. Enter keyword Boomer at checkout. They're the most comfortable sock I've ever worn. Never really thought I'd be a big sock guy, but they really have changed the way that I walk around. And I think that you can wear them out on the golf course as well because you can't see them. You don't have to, you know, you used to have to flip up the backside of your socks so you didn't see them from your golf shoes. I know the golf people will know what I'm talking about. They're perfect for golf.
You won't look like a poor out there on the golf course.
And you don't want to do that.
All right, head over to deadsoxy.com. That's deadsoxy.com. Use your promo code Boomer for 30% off the best dress socks that you've ever put on. And as always, stay soxy. Look, you mentioned the running back, guys. I think that's something that we need to bring up. That's another thing. Like, losing Kennedy Brooks and Trey Sermon, they just don't have a back as good as either one of those guys right now.
It was brought up on Gabe's little breakdowns that he put up on Twitter. Kennedy Brooks makes a couple of those guys miss.
Yeah.
And all this. And I think it was, I've given Jalen Hurts some love. I'm about to give Dean Blevin some love. I'm turning the corner. Is it true they haven't had a run over 15 yards this year? I think that is true.
No,
because
McGowan have the big touchdown run against Missouri State?
That was a screen pass.
You're right. Okay. You're right.
Which is just kind of unbelievable considering, I mean, you couldn't have a 15-plus yard run against Missouri State. That tells you everything that you need to know about what is happening with this run game right now.
I am a little concerned that we didn't see Marcus Major. Like, if he's already banged up, that's already kind of a concern.
Do you think that's what that is?
A couple times by the coaching staff when he was trying to come in, and they grabbed him and threw him back on the sideline.
Never good when you're getting a DNP coach's decision in the second game of the year.
Yeah.
So we've got two carries over 20 yards, at least two.
Okay, well then.
Charleston Rambo on that one of the reverses.
Right. Way to go, Eddie. Come on, Dean. Behind Dean.
Seth McGowan did have a 23-yard run.
Okay.
So Dean's throwing.
They may
fake
have
stats.
Had more than that,
fake
but
news,
those are their
stats.
Two longs for the year. Chandler Morris had a 16-yard run.
I think it was running backs, just by the running backs.
Okay, fair enough.
It was going to be a miracle that game was played. By the way, this week.
We did get a miracle.
It's a miracle.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny
Spencer
how
Rattler,
like that hasn't come up at all this week. I don't know. It's just kind of weird.
I think you're dead on, Eddie, that Jalen Hurts wins that game. And it doesn't bring me any more joy to make that admission either. But when that offensive line started breaking down, that plays right into what Jalen Hurts' problem was last year. First guy's not there, run. First guy, you know, just over and over and over again. He just had better O-line play last year.
Sure.
For whatever reason. I still can't quite explain why that's a problem. But, you know, with Rattler, I said it after Missouri State, his clock's got to speed up a little bit. There are times when, yeah, the O-line may not be blocking perfectly, but they're doing enough, and he's got to find an option or get rid of it.
He's, like, he's struggling with the speed of the college game.
Exactly. So you just chalk that up to a guy that literally hadn't played a – I mean, it was excuse, but that was the first Division I opponent he had ever played. I mean, I would imagine the speed is a little bit different.
It's coming at him faster than he can process it. It's freaking him out.
Sure.
I'm certainly not saying that's all of it. The O-line has not helped him as much as you would have thought they would. But there, I mean, like, there were times, and I think I said it on Twitter, I was like, he's starting to feel pressure that's not there.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
As soon
yeah.
as the snap would happen, he's breaking out right. And you're like, you're making that easier. That's easier for that Duke kid to just run around Anton Harrison than to have to go through him to get to you. You're just making it a foot race, and you're not fast enough. In high school, he was probably a good enough athlete he could just run away from people. He's learning that these defensive ends at this level, guys like Hubert and Duke at Kansas State are good, two good players, they're going to run you down. You can't do that. And so he's got to learn and get comfortable stepping into that pocket, which normally you would think is a good thing because that's where his experience and that's where, you know, probably the two best offensive linemen should be between Humphrey and Hayes. Now, Hayes didn't have a great game either, so they've got a lot to work out. But like I said, he's got to do some things to help the offensive line as well.
And the thing about Rattler is he has to kind of learn, you know, when to leave. I mean, he really does. He has to learn. There's some opportunities for him the way they were playing with two deep safeties that, you know, if Lincoln would have called probably more quarterback draws, they could have taken advantage of it. I know a lot of people were like, why aren't they doing that? But it's kind of like I watch Baker Sunday. I think we can all agree, Baker's not setting any land speed. He's a 4.7 guy. I mean, he's quick, but he has a really innate sense of when to use his feet and when he can get some yards versus, you know, when to just go ahead and try and get a pass off and take a sack if you have to. Like, he knows when it's a wasted opportunity to run the football.
And it's been a little bit of a learning process just in the NFL as far as, like, I used to get away with this in college.
Yeah.
And now he tries to do it and he sacked, you know, for a 4-yard loss because he's not as fast as the other guys.
Right. But, I mean, he has a – that's what Spencer needs to develop, kind of what Baker has, just that – that sense of when is it my time to pull it down and go, and when should I just stick with this because that's the only way I'm going to make it.
I don't know if you could hear it on TV, but in the stadium, like on a couple of those plays when you could tell there was just nobody in the middle of the field, you could hear like the groan from the crowd.
Oh,
like,
really?
Like, run! Like, you know, it just was, I don't know. Maybe I noticed it more because there was less people in the stadium, and it's just like maybe those are the people that always yell at games, but you could just tell, like, there was nobody in the middle of the field. Why didn't you take advantage of it? But then again, like, you know, I thought his pocket presence, it wore on after he'd been sacked a couple times and you start hearing ghosts or whatever that phrase is.
Seeing ghosts. Yeah.
I guess you can't hear ghosts because could you see him?
Sam Darnold got caught talking about that on the bench, but that's a pretty common phrase. I will say, Eddie, I don't want to say that I didn't hear that since I wasn't at the stadium, and I also don't want to say that's the reason OU lost is because they didn't let me have a press box seat.
I mean, all we know is you've been 1-0 when OU's in the stadium, yes. And 0-1 when you haven't.
Exactly.
Luckily for Oklahoma fans, you're headed to Ames this week.
I am headed to Ames, so if they win,
I mean, there might be something
to it. You're welcome.
There might be something to it.
Looks like I'm staying home.
No, you are staying home. There's no room for you. So
rest of the season, I'll be staying home.
I could make that deal. I don't mind that deal. I know you want to stay home with Pearl and watch the game.
Oh man, I can't. No.
I'm anxious to hear about Bob. That needs to be a segment next week. Bob's game watching at home with the child. Like, that's
GoPros set up.
Yeah, exactly. We'll broadcast it on Patreon.
See how many times he actually drops the kid on its head. Okay, I better stop or I'm gonna get in trouble by the wife.
Tiffany is going out of town this weekend, so I'm gonna be dealing with children solo while trying to watch the game. So it's gonna be a really interesting weekend for the Sooner Scoop crew.
I would literally buy a big cage to put them in. So they would just be right. I could see them and know that they're not dying.
Yes.
But that they couldn't bother me. It would. I mean, I'd put stuff in it. You know, a big cage.
The baby
I'm talking
gates.
About.
Yeah. I mean, you're not crazy. There's people have baby gates all over the place.
I guess a room. My office could be a cage.
Sure. Sure.
Of course, they like with Josh. They'd screw with all the buttons on the.
Oh, for sure. No. Oh.
Yep.
Lainey, you've got a chance that that's going to work. Layla will find a way to burn your house down. That girl does not play. She is a problem.
I have a lot of. I could order a lot of sound isolation foam. They can
okay.
make my life better.
Now we're talking.
Anyway, so I, Josh or Bob, anything else in the game that you wanted to throw out there that just kind of is. As we wrap it up and kind of move on to Iowa State, that just kind of is stuck in your mind, or
I guess the only thing that is Alex Grinch trying too hard to find depth. When you're having three and outs like crazy in the first half, is there a reason that Deshaun White, Brian Asamoah, Nick Benito, guys like that, need to even be taken off the field? I mean, I know he wants a top 22, but if your top 11 are doing what they need to do. Why tinker with it?
I think the answer is that's just who Alex Grinch is, and that's what he's going to do. Because
does it throw people off their rhythm?
No, it's because that's the very definition of Speed D. He wants guys fresh. He wants them flying around. And, you know, even if there is a little bit of a drop-off, which he's not accepting, that's his philosophy. It's just what you have. You have Alex Grinch as your defensive coordinator. You have rotating players. That's what he believes in. That's who he is. I don't think that he's going to be like, oh, yeah, it's not working that well, so I'm going to stop. It's like saying, okay, we're going to stop getting turnovers. We're going to stop trying for turnovers because we're not getting any.
I mean, shit, they did it without, quote-unquote, depth a year ago. Now that they have some guys that they can throw out there, I don't think it's going to stop. But I do think that...
I mean, Woody Washington was the leading tackler at halftime.
It's crazy.
And he didn't start the game.
It's crazy, but.
I mean, if you can get the right depth and young depth, I mean, it works.
You know, I do think it's interesting just as far as the defense goes is just the inability to just force any type of turnover. And I know that that is kind of, I guess, one of the talking points that has come out of the first two games is the fact that Oklahoma hasn't been able to do that. They haven't been able to do it a year ago.
Well, they had a turnover in game one.
Well, yeah, but like not multiple, not what they preach. Like I'm kind of at the point almost where I know they want to force turnovers, but when you say it as much as they do, I think it's almost a mentality thing as much as it is actually going out and forcing five turnovers a game.
You would think they would just have more just by happenstance at this point.
I know that's like one of those things. It's like you watch football all weekend. Miami, I felt like the Miami-Louisville game, they were putting on the damn turnover chain every other series. Oh, you can't, like, and this is a complete OU homer thing to say, but it's like, it never feels like a team puts the ball on the ground against Oklahoma. They never are in the spot where it's like, oh, there's the ball. Like the Caleb Kelly touchdown return
in West Virginia.
Yeah. That rarely happens, it seems like, to Oklahoma.
Except to have the Curtis Bolt that exact same game.
Happened twice in one game. Strange things happen in Morgantown.
By the way, I mean, Josh, would you say part of that is just that OU is not just relentless with pressure? I mean, they just don't seem to make a team flabbergasted, almost, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I feel like there is, and, you know, this is pre-Alex Grinch, there's just always been this thing where it seems like Oklahoma has to mix it up. Like, not going to be like, well, we're having a lot of success putting pressure in Skylar Thompson's face or whoever. Let's just keep it going. Let's just keep hammering that until they figure out a way to solve that. Instead, it's more like, well, we blitzed them on first and second. We're going to drop coverage on third. Like, and I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying you want to be formulaic about it. You want to have surprise. But, man, you know, like I think back to it's always the game I think about when I think about a quarterback under pressure, that Kansas State-Oklahoma game way back in 01 when Nate Hibble just gets massacred. I mean, just – and Kansas State, that was the only way they were stopping Oklahoma. They just kept coming and coming and coming. And it was the only chance they had to get off the field, and so that's what they did. And I feel like Oklahoma sometimes will just – not like for, you know, like, oh, we don't want to hit him. It's just almost like, well, it's time for us to mix it up. Like, why? Like, why change it if that's what's working? I would like to go back and look at it and see what the blitzes were like, but it felt like to me almost through the entire second half, but definitely later in the third quarter into the fourth, there was a let's just hold on to this thing. Like, let's just kind of back off. We're going to try to prevent big plays. And obviously the exact opposite happened.
Which is, and by the way, real quick on defense, one guy that we haven't pointed out that I thought played pretty damn well. I thought Buki played pretty good on Saturday.
Buki had a great
game. He did. He really did.
A couple tackles right at the sticks. It was like, holy shit. Like, who is this guy?
The first half, he was phenomenal.
Yeah, he was awesome.
The problem is everybody just kind of was so blah and just nothing in the second. Not one person really stood out in the second half at all.
And I think that's where you get into the point, like, if they are becoming conservative in the second half, offensive and defensively, it's kind of the what we talked about, Kerry, on the postgame podcast, was just the fact that, like, this. And I think Riley kind of said it on Tuesday when we talked to him. It's a little bit of a look in the mirror moment for Oklahoma, and why are they building these leads and unable to basically put the foot on the throat of the opposition? I don't know. I don't know what that answer is.
Moment for Riley.
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
More than anybody.
The thing I wanted to ask, and it's honestly, you know, I think when, and this is true of all of us, like when you watch the games week in and week out, and you watch it as closely as we do, and we go back and we talk about everything, I think sometimes you get caught up in the minutiae and you forget the bigger things. I don't know that I recognized that penalties and turnovers have – I mean, like, turnovers, probably yes, over the last year and a half, because Grinch has made it such a big thing and has put such a spotlight on it. But both giveaways and takeaways being problematic, and penalties. Like, I don't think I recognize that Oklahoma was as bad in those categories as they are. I mean, it's there, and that's always, you know, and it's an old school style of looking at things, but that always has been something people have said, well, that's a discipline problem. Like, that's a team that's not disciplined, is penalties and turnovers and those kind of things. Like, do you put stock in that? I mean, is that a real question that has to be asked?
I mean, I don't know if they're a full-blown discipline problem, but they do have lapses where it's like, you got to be better than that, man.
I think Marquise Hayes has discipline problems on the offensive line.
Sure.
Josh, this is kind of how I look at it. Like, it's a lot more glaring the last 2 years, and it was very glaring for Oklahoma on Saturday. You know why? Because every time Oklahoma would make a play, which wasn't often offensively, it would get called back because of a penalty.
Yep.
Yet when Kyler Murray or Baker Mayfield were the quarterback, they could overcome that shit like it was nothing. Like, they're third and one, and they get a holding penalty, and it goes to third and 11. They just pick up third and 11.
It's like, okay, well, this is just an opportunity to get some more passing yards.
Yeah, but I mean,
or for Kyler to pick it up with his feet.
That was never going to happen in the second half of that game against Kansas State. Every play was gold. I mean, like, every little advancement that they could make, or every time they could make something happen, like, that was less common than just a play that resulted in nothing. So when they have a penalty the last couple of years, and Jalen Hurts was a lot of the same way, when you have a penalty and it takes away a potential first down, you're probably not getting that first down again.
No.
So it's allowed us, I think, it's probably allowed Lincoln Riley to overlook that his teams aren't that disciplined.
I would have to think, too, from the defensive side of the ball and the guys that have been out there and, you know, have played over the last couple of years, as much as they don't want to admit it, they've relied on the offense bailing their ass out time and time again.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't had to come up with stops, and credit to them. They technically did get the ball back in Oklahoma's hands, even though there was only 49 seconds left, which, you know, we can debate that forever. I think it was a kind of an ignorant decision to punt there, but they did come up with stops. They just, that you have to eliminate the big plays or you're going to be in this position time and time again all year.
Yeah, I mean, the punt was along with the momentum of the game, which is the offense wasn't doing anything.
Sure. Well, and the turnovers. I mean, the turnover, you eliminate the turnovers, Oklahoma probably wins the game. I thought the Seth McGowan fumble completely changed the complexion of that game.
And I don't really put that on him as like...
It was a great play.
You know, oh, that was a terrible play by a freshman. It was
That was a great defensive play.
Great hit. Ball came out.
I think the guy won Big 12 Defensive Player of the Week.
I mean, it was just a shit show. It really was.
No doubt. Now they move on to Iowa State, and you know, a place and a team that is, be honest, they've given OU trouble over the last couple years.
And they'll have fans in the stands. Not that, you know, it's for the first time this year. Not that that's really going to be a factor. Or it should be a factor.
No,
but I don't know what the. I haven't looked up the weather to see what it's going
to
be like.
Be beautiful.
Up there. Is it
mid-50s?
Be nice. But yeah, I mean, you're on the road in a hostile environment for the first time, Spencer Rattler. You're playing against a defense that's probably going to employ some of the same tactics that Kansas State did, because they always play that umbrella defense. They're going to try and take away the deep ball. Can you run the ball? You know, can the offensive line get in shape? And defensively, I mean, Brock Purdy. He's kind of the joke of college football because that play he had at TCU where he throws it backwards when he's going down.
Never seen something like that.
One of the worst plays I've ever seen. But at the same time,
Landry Jones-esque.
They still won the game and put up 37 points against TCU, which usually is pretty good defensively in Fort Worth. Like they're scary because they always suck in the beginning. And then they always come back and make problems for everybody.
It will be a tough game. With that said, it's a game that Oklahoma should go up and win.
They have to win.
I mean, I don't think that's definitely not a hot take by any means.
It's not.
I mean,
well, they're favored by what, 7?
7-ish.
I mean, they have to win this game.
I'd hope that it gets otherwise, down to like 5.5 and then you jump.
Otherwise, I mean, you are staring at 1-3 in the face. And when's the last time you could say that for an Oklahoma? I mean, they lost to Houston and Ohio State and they started out 1-2. And they went to TCU. Lincoln kind of talked about this week. Got down 21-7. Samaje Perine. Remember, that's when Ben Powers came in at left guard and kind of totally changed the complexion of that offensive line.
Woke up.
Yeah.
Dede's first two touchdowns.
And OU just kind of blew their doors off in the end. I mean, you never really blow TCU's doors off at home, but down 21-7, they just ran right past him.
Yeah, I think the biggest question mark coming out of Saturday, I'm not as worried about, you know, the things that happened within the game as much as the response. And, you know, I think that it was a valid question asking about leadership yesterday or Tuesday to Lincoln Riley, who are going to be the guys that kind of keep this thing together. Because in recent years, it's been whether it's a Jalen Hurts calling a team meeting or a Kenneth Murray speaking out or a Kyler Murray, you know, whoever. Baker Mayfield, they've always kind of relied on that faction or that group of guys to be the outspoken guys. And, you know, I think, you know, Kerry, you wrote the story and you talked to Jeremiah Hall yesterday about it. I think that group of guys, they have to kind of keep this thing together. And all of a sudden, if they don't, you're going to be 1-3 after Texas and all hell really will break loose around here.
Yeah, the first quarter is going to be so pivotal, just to see the body language, just to see if any doubts start to creep in, or is this a group that has put it in the past and knows what type of team they're capable of being, which is sort of what Riley's been preaching too. It's like, you know, if we're who we think we should be or who we are, then we'll use Saturday and we'll figure out what went wrong and we'll use it to make sure that we don't do it again. And you'll see the first signs of that in Ames.
Well, if you come out and you come out and get down and things don't go well in the first half and they look like they're defeated, there is a question about the culture of the program. That, I mean, that's the softest thing I've ever heard. If that were to be the case.
I mean, what it comes down to is you got a bunch of guys that are, you know, most part pretty big recruits playing a game. Some of those guys have to step up, have to find some playmakers, because there are no playmakers on the defensive side of the ball right now.
Who's going to be that guy that forces a turnover and then you start moving in the right direction? Bukie, you could say,
was a playmaker in the first half, but that's about it.
Sure.
I mean, I think Asamoah and Deshaun have done some decent things, but the defensive line's been wildly inconsistent. I can't say that we've seen Perrion Winfrey flash at all.
That was probably my biggest takeaway from, or not biggest, but like that was a little bit worrisome that you don't, like, I thought, you know, after you see him against Missouri State, it's like, all right, there's a lot to like there. He was in the backfield, he's pushing people around. And I mean, I can't think of a play on Saturday against Kansas State that you go, ooh, Perrion Winfrey, that looked good.
Especially when Kansas State was down, all those guys in the secondary, and the offensive line was the same group that had problems against Arkansas State.
Sure.
That's where you thought those guys were really going to make a move, and they just did not do it.
No, and Iowa State, I mean, if Brock Purdy has time, he can carve you up. So they've just got to – and, you know, I think Lincoln is pretty clear that, you know, they're handling this the way that they always handle it after a tough loss. They're challenging guys. He feels good about the way things are going so far, the way the team will react. It's a proud program, a lot of pride. It's just, you know, they're talking about, they got the 10-part series, the standard. Are you really the standard, or are you substandard?
In the 10th series, or in the 10th episode, are they going to get their ass kicked in the college football playoff? Seems to be the standard.
Wow. Just a shot out of... Wow.
Oh, we're all having fun here. It's just a good time. I do think it's funny, though, that, you know, well, I guess it's not funny. Never mind. I'm already digging holes. Guys, I'm acting out because it's playoff. It's playoff Wednesday. I'm nervous. Right? I'm just acting
out. No doubt.
It's playoff baseball. It's baseball season anyways.
Good luck with that. My Royals suck.
I was going to say, the Royals season go well?
No, it did not. Not when you can't make the playoffs when there's 17 teams or whatever. It was not a good season. All right, so I'll be in Ames coming up this weekend. It's a whole weird deal. Like, we didn't even find out until yesterday that we even could be in the press box, and that's just kind of how this year is going. I know there's been high school games canceled. There's been Texas is on the verge of getting ready to start, Josh. I mean, what does it look like in the state of Texas right now in terms of, you know, games and starting and cancellations and how widespread is it there? Because I know in Oklahoma, you guys covered Edlam on Monday night, and that was a postponement from Friday.
Yeah. And then those guys are going to turn around and play Friday. So Memorial and San Fe will play two games in 5 days.
No clue
how that's going to go down.
Bob is kind of he's having a tough time of it. Have you not seen any significant performances so far this year, Bob?
The best one so far is Jordan Mukes, and that was, you know, on a weighted scale a little bit, like where you were kind of hoping to see something. You know, I thought we were going to go out to Canadian, Texas, home of Tanner Schaefer, to see Brendan Thompson, the 2022 receiver target. And that dude's just been putting up numbers like crazy. I was like, all right, I'm finally going to see a game where the guy that I go watch goes off. And then, of course, we get the news last night that game has been canceled. And so now I'm kind of struggling trying to find something. But, yeah, I mean – you know, seen good outings, but, you know, nothing that is, you know, you go and see Talon Shetron and he gets 3 catches for 21 yards because Memorial's like, you're not going to beat us. Santa Fe still scores 46. But, yeah, Talon didn't beat him. So, you know, it hasn't been a strong first month of the season for me in terms of seeing the guys and watching them show out.
Don't they know that the people need good video right now to lift their spirits?
I told Josh on Tuesday night when we were
with this BS
when we were at the
shut people down
Booker T Choctaw game. It's like someday we're going to go to a game and they're going to run straight at the Oklahoma commit. It seems like it never works out like that, and I wonder why.
When we went to see Laith Harlow, and that game sucked, and then his coach was like, "We wanted to leave." His coach was like, "No, stay. I'm going to put him in. We're going to do some stuff for him." That was totally worth it.
I think walking out
it?
Into the parking lot, we could have told you that that wasn't going to work.
Totally worth it because his career turned out awesome.
Was that a Bruce Kittle?
Operation?
Yeah, no,
Bruce Kittle. Guys, we've talked a lot about us traveling into SEC territory and not having luck, but game day viewings for you guys include Dante Manning, Laith Harlow,
Doriel Green Beckham,
Tavion Thomas.
My God. It's a good thing we didn't go see Brian Asamoah that weekend. He wouldn't even be here.
If the Sooner Scoop crew comes to see you out of state, you're either not going to OU or you're going to end up being a bust. Congratulations.
And most of the time we go, they are commitments already, or, you know, or we feel really good that they're going to be a commitment, and then it just totally falls apart.
It's always I'm it's on cursed. Alert now with Danny Stutzman. Like, I'm watching him like a hawk.
Mario Williams.
Oh, Josh,
will he end
I
up
Mario
OU?
Williams. Your thoughts on Mukes now that you've gotten to see him.
Yeah, you know, and I saw him in the spring, or I guess in the summer, basically as a spring practice type setup. But, you know, you see what Oklahoma likes. I mean, he is big, long. He's put on some good weight. He's a bigger guy than you think he is, kind of bigger, broader shouldered, you know, obviously just unbelievable length, you know, arms, legs. I mean, he's one of those guys, if he's near the passing lane, he's going to disrupt it. But, you know, you can't pretend that he had a particularly great game against Booker T. He didn't. Missed some key tackles. I thought late in the game, I thought he got a little rattled. You know, there was a lot of Booker T, the sidelines kind of chirping at him, and obviously they knew who he was and was, you know, trying to mess him up a little bit. And I thought at times that, I don't know if that bothered him, but it looked like it did. But, you know, like I said, I mean, this is one of those things where Oklahoma right now defensively is not going to go get the 6'3", 180-pound safety that can run, who also has the best tape in the country. Those guys are going to Alabama and Clemson and Georgia and Ohio State. They've got to find the guys that have all the potential but aren't that guy yet. To me, I think the biggest things for Mukes is just figuring out that he is the best athlete on the field. Like, I think at times he acts like a guy that isn't sure that he's the guy that can go make the play. And I'm like, just go do it. You're that guy. You're that guy, Choctaw. If a big play is going to be made, it's going to be you. And so I know 2 weeks ago he dropped an interception. He almost had one against Booker T as well. And again, I think it's just him. He's still figuring all of this out. Like, there's just so much basketball in there for him. I think he's really figuring out the football side of things. And I think once he stops thinking and can just play and be the athlete that he is, there's a lot of potential there. But the gap from where he is now to where OU will need him to be a guy that can start and really make an impact for them, it's a big hill to climb. But I think, and people say, well, what about Kendall Daniels? I think this is the difference. You've seen in Jordan Mukes big improvement, not only on the field, but in the weight room. He has shown you signs that he is a guy that will put in the work to develop his talent. I think that was the question about Kendall Daniels. Would he commit himself to football in the way he needed to? And I think Mukes has given you reason to believe that he will do that, but people are going to have to be patient with him.
All right, I know we're running out of time here, guys, but Sooners get a commitment, a nice commitment on a Sunday after the loss to Kansas State.
Always awkward when it works out, like, shitty weekend, but bright spot at the end.
Well, and it kind of goes to show you that recruits, I always tell this to people, you know, recruits lose games too.
Yeah.
Like, they get it. You don't win every game. It's not the end of the world to them.
And I think there's also a little bit in the back of their mind, I'm going to be the guy that doesn't lose those games.
Yeah, exactly. Josh, tell us about OU's newest commitment. Obviously, someone very close and personal to Caleb Williams as well.
Yeah, you know, this was a guy that I think we all just kind of assumed was going to be part of this class, you know, last year, when when Caleb Williams made his decision back on the 4th of July, this felt inevitable. Then he came to the Sooner Summit and seemed to have a good time. So this wasn't, you know, a huge surprise.
It's Jalel Farouk. We haven't said his name. I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought you were going to say his name right off the bat.
I thought I did. Sorry. I'll be honest. I was looking for ammunition to back up the decision of Farouk. You know, like, oh, yeah, he's going to commit to OU. He's lost football games. I was like, okay, he went 15-0, and they won state last year in Maryland. So he doesn't really apply to this conversation, but I'm sure Jalil Farouk has lost a football game.
I'm sorry, you're so much smarter than I am.
No. I was backing you up. I was going to say, yes, this is true, but in this case, no, he just happens to play for a really, really good team. But anyway, so this is a guy that I think is really interesting in a lot of ways. I think he is one of those receivers, and I've said it before, I think he can play outside. I think he can play in the slot. I think he can run a lot of different routes. I think he is one of those guys that really will do what you need him to do. I don't think he is the elite speed guy, but if you wanted a receiver that's physical enough to go over the middle, make plays, can break some tackles while he's there, and make something out of a short play, I think he can do that. Where I think he gets really interesting, and it's funny because you guys let it in with talking about, you know, bad or good news following bad. Well, the question always is in that scenario, well, can he play safety? Can he play defense for Oklahoma? I think he could. I think he's a really talented defender. So if Oklahoma's receiver recruiting continues to go as we're seeing it, and that 2022 class is as good as I think it might be at receiver, maybe Oklahoma comes back to him after a year or so and says, hey, you know, we're happy with you at receiver. You can stay here if you want to do that. Or we've got an option at safety and we need some help there, where maybe you could come on and play earlier over there and be a, you know, maybe be a starter, maybe be a big time guy for us. I will be interested to see if he takes that role, because, you know, you watch him for Wise in Maryland. He makes a lot of plays defensively. This isn't a guy that you would just put over there kind of as a wing and a prayer. There's reason to think that maybe he could be a safety for Oklahoma.
All right, we are out of time because we have got to get to some more media today, Alex Grinch. That's what you get for Wednesdays. We're trying to crash this or squash this in between radio and media stuff. So, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I will be on the road to Ames, Iowa, over the weekend to cover Oklahoma's game with the Cyclones, and we'll see what happens. I mean, Sooners obviously need a win very, very badly. Probably Lincoln Riley's biggest game since he's been a head coach, at least in the regular season. So going to be interesting to see what happens. We'll talk some more recruiting. Just real quick, guys, Josh, you want to hit up on what people can expect?